Hello, this is Shirley Gutkowski.
And this is Judy Carroll.
Judy is a new author to our Modern Millennial Hygienist column here on the Modern Hygienist, and she has contributed a pretty interesting article about our limitations to root planing.
Yeah, Shirley, I wanted to bring to light the fact that we have been taught to do blind root planing and blind clinical diagnosis all these years, and I doubt that many people really question this very foundational component, if you will, about creating healthy patients and preventing bone loss and further problems. So I really wanted to bring this to light, calling it a dirty little secret, because it really is something that we tend to kind of put by the wayside because we've kind of almost accepted that this is just the way things are. And I feel so strongly after using an endoscope for 15 years that we really do need to start taking a closer look at this and giving hygienists proper tools to do their job in a way that's more definitive rather than groping around in the dark. And that's really what this article is. It's intended to bring this issue to light so that we can start talking about it.
That was one of the things that kept me from buying loops for such a long time because everybody was focusing on visualization. I'm like, I don't visualize anything. I do everything under the gums and I just go everything by feel. And it's not a very pleasant or happy way to practice.
No, it doesn't make you feel good as a clinician, especially when you work in perio practice and you are doing, you're doing advanced root planing cases all day long, and really what you're doing is preparing them for flap surgery. That was my experience of many years of working in periodontal specialty practices. I do the blind traditional root planing, and then the periodontist a few weeks later performs flap surgery, and he even calls me in to show me what I've missed. And I begged that periodontist for an endoscope. I didn't know at the time that there was an endoscope technology. I just told him, look, I can't do any better. I'm doing the best I can with what I have. And I was very frustrated. I was also very frustrated in school when they were teaching this because it just didn't make sense to me to grope around underneath the gums with an explorer or other tools trying to determine if I'd cleaned the root properly. And so when you get the patient back in a few weeks and they still have periodontal depths that are deeper than what you want for healthy status, it's very frustrating because for me, I'm results driven. I want to see that patient come back with everything nice and tight and healthy, and that just wasn't happening for me. It's also quite shocking when you first pick up an endoscope to look into these pockets that you think are healthy. I'll put that in quotes because they may not bleed on probing, but you go in and you look at it, and there's such active disease going on there, even in a 5 millimeter pocket, And the reason for that is there's burnished calculus in there that we could not detect with our explorer or our scalers or anything that we're using
Can you
currently.
tell between calculus or burnished calculus and root surface with a bent wire?
No, you can't. You can't tell the difference because it feels the same. And so therefore you're leaving, up to 50% of the root is still covered with burnished calculus when you're done doing your traditional root planing approach. And that clinically.
If calculus isn't, sorry, but this is a point that's going to come up a lot because calculus isn't the root cause of periodontal disease. If you put a sterilized piece of calculus into a sulcus or into a pocket, and even the sulcus and pocket discussion has been going weird on some of these internet groups, but the sterilized calculus is not going to be a problem for the tissue. The problem is
Right.
that there's a biofilm in each tiny little crevice in the calculus that's not being removed.
Yeah, and the calculus is what I call the home of the biofilm. That's the home of the bacteria. It's a place where bacteria can colonize and become even more progressively toxic. And so if left undisturbed, we go in and we use a Restin or we use whatever adjunctive therapies we like to use, lasers, ozone, you know, the list goes on. But the fact of the matter is, if this foundational issue of not getting that burnished calculus out is not addressed, then that calculus is a place for biofilm to reform within a short period of time.
Right.
So we're constantly putting adjunctive, you know, local delivery antimicrobials, all of these things. We may be teaching our patients to use a water pick, you know, on and on. But, you know, really the solution is remove that home of the biofilm altogether, and then you don't have this problem. Tom Wilson did an interesting pilot study where he demonstrated what he kind of hypothesized as, you know, when he looked at calculus and he looked at the biofilm on the calculus, burnished calculus, and the tissue adjacent to that, very inflamed, just, you know, very red in the sulcus. And then he looked at biofilm that was not attached to calculus in the sulcus, and there was no inflammation in the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you? There's something going on with the calculus that allows biofilm to mature and, like I said, become even more toxic over time. So this is something that's really might be hard to understand unless you actually use an endoscope and see it every day. But it's something that I wanted to bring to light because, you know, that toxic biofilm it's constantly going into the systems of the patient. And whether their immune system is handling that or not, we, you know, often don't know unless we're doing very specific tests to find out if there are biomarkers and showing vascular inflammation and these sorts of things. And now that we know, you know, that certain pathogens are connected definitively to many serious diseases, we've got to be able to do our part as hygienists and have the proper tools to remove that home of that toxic biofilm. You know, it's insanity to think that this profession should continue down this road of blind approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, we're not serving our patients. We're not serving our patients if they have a 5-millimeter pocket or 6-millimeter pocket that may not bleed on probing, but yet has this active disease going on that we just don't know about. You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
You know?
It's invisible. And we look at medicine and go, well, they don't even think about the mouth and yada, yada. Well, we don't really either, because we don't believe anything is there unless we see it with our own eyes. So that's why these periscopes are so important. And it's amazing how long it takes for dentistry to pick up on things, isn't it?
Oh, just, you know, Shirley, I started using an endoscope 15 years ago, and I never in a million years thought 15 years later that I would still be one of only maybe 100 clinicians doing this at this point still. I truly feel that this should be in every single hygiene operatory, because it's that important. It's well beyond using loops. I mean,
yeah.
Take the use of loops and what it's done for us clinically and for doctors clinically, and multiply that times 100.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we're talking about here as far as significance, in my opinion. So, yeah, I wanted to kind of start the discussion on this because I think that a lot of us are just kind of ignoring this thing, but it's, you know, modern millennial hygienist is the hygienist who's about really pushing the standard of care. We need to raise the bar. This blind root planning is antiquated. It's from the dark ages, and it needs to be abolished. We need to be doing visual root planning with an endoscope under the gum. You know, creating healthier patients, because we know that biofilm is going to reform within a matter of a few days if you don't get those sheets of burnished calculus out of there that you have no idea are there. And those of you who work in periodontal practice, you've seen it with your own eyes when your periodontist opens up the patient and they show you everything you've missed. But it's like,
and isn't that
kind
of like a
spanking?
This? It's just like, really? What did you expect?
But think about how many patients we could keep out of surgery if we actually had the tools to do our job properly. I mean, my job is to get this patient healthy non-surgically. If I'm not given proper tools to do that, how am I going to achieve that? It's impossible. It's an impossible task. The literature is replete with studies showing that we can't remove calculus non-surgically with blind root planning. We can't. We leave 30 to 50% of the root covered with calculus, and thus biofilm. And that's why this is so important. And if you think that you're cleaning your patient every 3 months is really, yeah, there's a lot of studies to show that they'll remain stable if they come in every 3 months and we do our due diligence and irrigate and do all that. But what about the times in between when we're not with that patient and that biofilm is continuing to flood into the capillaries and go into the cardiovascular system? You know, what about our patients with rheumatoid arthritis or other high-risk issues? You know, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and all these things. We have something that we can control, and that's keeping that biofilm in check. But unfortunately, we can't control it if we're doing blind root planning. We just can't. And to think that we think that we're maintaining that patient in a healthy status, unfortunately, we're very, very wrong if there's still burnished calculus.
And that's what your article's about, A Dirty Little Secret. This is Shirley Gutkowski.
And this is Judy Carroll.
See you next time.